Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Mike Tomlin's game plan is the same every week. Doesn't matter who the quarterback was or what year it is. Play good defense, turn the ball over, you know, try to get the running game going, but play good field position, make them drive it against that defense, don't give up many points, and win. I will say win ugly, but win.
Bo, can you take us through the interception in the end zone?
Yeah. Drop back, threw it to the other team.
Broncos quarterback Bo Nix in the postgame. I missed that before our show yesterday, but I did see it in the afternoon, and I think it is appropriate to fold that into this conversation. I'll tell you why in a second. But hey, Bo Nix, what happened on the interception?
Drop back and threw it to the other team.
He ain't wrong.
Nope.
Nice play by Trice. Dante Jackson hurt. Trice comes in. Bang! Interception. But Bill Belichick, we spent some time on this yesterday, probably not enough time on this yesterday. Bill Belichick says, yeah, Mike Tomlin, every week, it's going to be the same thing. Run the ball, play defense, don't turn it over, find a way to win. I'm not going to say win ugly, but win basically ugly. And we saw Kirk Cousins last night lead a game-winning touchdown drive with 34 seconds to go in a primetime game. That was Kirk Cousins saying, F all y'all, especially you, Crowley, who said I can't get it done in big moments.
Yep.
And not only that, Doran, from the game last night that I think is important to bring up, Justin Simmons with an interception, Justin Simmons 12 tackles and a TFL. And the reason I brought that up is so that I could play this clip and then we shall discuss. Arthur Smith, why did you not throw the ball over the middle of the field against Atlanta?
That was my respect to Jesse Bates. Don't let their best player wreck the game. We had a couple other things for Jesse. I don't know why more people don't know about him, but you know he's arguably one of the top players in the league, and he wrecked week one. If you watched week one last year, he damn near won it by himself. Two picks, almost got a third, fumble, forced fumble late. And the way the game was going, you know, we were able to stay ahead, and it allowed us to not try to let him affect it.
So I said Justin Simmons. I meant to say Jesse Bates. Uh-huh. So an early screw-up for me, but not a surprising one. Jesse Bates wrecked the game for Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I mean, he wrecked their game. 12 tackles, TFL, interception. And so the reason I want to bring all that up and play the Belichick clip is because that was a smart game plan for Arthur Smith not to attack the middle of the field and not invite disaster. And then you win the game. Philly didn't approach it the same way, and they lose the game. Against Denver, I think they just sat on that thing in the second half. And the question, long way around this, Doran, is this who Mike Tomlin is going to be this year? Or were they just really smart saying, Bo Nix is not going to beat us in the second half? Because I'm kind of torn here. I think these were smart game plans to beat their respective opponents, but is this just game plan specific, or is this who they are?
I think time will tell. If it's game plan specific, but every game plan is game plan specific. But I will say this, it was a very smart 2 weeks because they had two legitimate components to those teams from the year before. Arthur Smith knows the personnel of Atlanta. He knows what's going to beat them. He knows what's not. Kirk Cousins, I know, is a new piece, but you still know the defense. He went against the defense every day. He knows Jesse Bates is like, listen, we're not going to even flirt with messing with that guy.
Yeah.
I'm telling you guys this right now. Listen to me. We're not even going to do that. This is how we're going to control the game. Russell, you don't think Russell Wilson had an input on what the personnel was against Denver?
Great point.
Wonder why he got the game ball. Maybe he was just another coach. Maybe he put in the game plan to attack the weaknesses of the Denver defense. It's a very smart way to look at it, and I'm glad that you brought this up. This is very astute radio hosting.
Took a long time for me to set it up, but I'm happy we're on the other side.
I would say it's a very smart game plan, but it was two very smart game plans, but it fell right into the house that they want to build. It's exactly what they want to do, and that these game plans gave them the opportunity to do that and have the control to do that. So I think a little bit of both. I think that this is what they want to be and how they will approach games, but there was a specific thing. There's specific things that they did in the first two games, the Steelers, that they were like, this is how we win on the road and get out of there just with a W.
Yes.
Who cares what it looks like? If we just do these things, we'll win.
Two and that's all wins. Bad. Two road wins.
Yeah.
This is a league. I saw this stat this morning, Doran. Underdogs of 5.5 points or more, 9-1 versus the spread, and have 5 outright wins. The league, and I mean this respectfully because it makes for enjoyment, the league is a mess in September.
Oh, yeah.
It just is. Yeah. You know better than me. That's bad football. I was watching the Manning cast last night, which is so good.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic.
Oh, my
God. If you want to learn about
God.
Football.
Doran, it was awesome. Yeah, they had Belichick on there.
I'll teach you now.
I mean, I'm learning stuff the entire time. And no offense to Tom Brady, if Peyton Manning had Tom Brady's job, he'd be doing it light years better. And he's been at it longer.
Right.
But those guys are great. Eli, not quite as much, but it was awesome. But they were talking about, at one point in particular, Bill Belichick goes, guys, you know, there's good defense and there's bad football, and that's bad offensive football right there. You're going to see a lot of bad offensive football in September. Why should we hold the Steelers to any different standard? If we didn't have high expectations, we thought the offense would be better, and I still think we think the offense can be better than last year's, but why would we hold the Steelers to some different standard in September than, let's say, the Bengals or the Ravens, who can't friggin' block anybody? The Bengals score like 0 points the first week against New England, and I think New England's probably going to have a good defense this year with Mayo, but you know those teams are struggling offensively. Dallas was horrendous the other day. Like, why do we hold the Steelers to a higher standard in September? Really, just find a way to win football games right now, and you hope that, like everybody else, the offense gets better along the way.
People are holding them to a higher standard because of the offensive coordinator and the quarterback of last year. And with the Steelers moving on from those two and almost admitting that those two were the issues, I think people are expecting that, oh, okay, you had the opportunity to handpick a better player and a better coach for those two things that were your main issues. If you're handpicking and getting rid of an issue and trying to make the issue better, you hope the product would be better. I think that might be the case. I don't think, and I think I see where you're coming from. Like, why are the Steelers getting talked about, oh, you only scored one touchdown, whenever the whole NFL offensively is just trying to find their stride? But I think here in Pittsburgh, people want to see different. They want to see it different than last year. And right now, it doesn't look different to most people. Some people, you can see through it. The continuity, yes, it does look different to some people. But most people, it doesn't look different. And that's why I think that they're being held to a higher standard, because they want to see a different offense. And they know that there's different quarterbacks that are on this roster. They want it to look different and look more explosive.
I do understand that. And I want to see it myself. I also can't unsee the rollout bomb that Justin Fields threw to George Pickens. I know it didn't count. I can't unsee it. It gives me visions of sugar plums dancing in my head. I can't unsee the pick play touchdown. I know they called it back. Gene Steratore came on, said it was the wrong call. I mean, they absolutely could have been up 17-0 or 21-0 in that first half. I thought they largely played good enough football to do that. And then they shot themselves in the foot. I don't think that's the fault of the offensive coordinator. I think it's a Cleet Blakeman flag-happy crew. And I think there were some execution issues. Stuff that you're seeing every team in football deal with right now.
Yeah.
But the reasons for optimism for me, the more I've thought about it, after digesting it a little bit more yesterday, Doran, the touchdown to Washington
is a personnel decision that does not get made last year and a play that is not called last year. The pick play. Like, did Matt Canada know that that was allowed? Like, you're allowed to call those kind of things? Like, because he didn't do it. They rushed for 141 yards. So they're right around top 10 in the NFL in rushing yards. And then you really, another reason for optimism, maybe it continues to get better for Justin Fields and you keep playing him. Maybe. But this isn't the quarterback they want to be playing.
That too.
So you've got the backup quarterback. You are without your best offensive lineman. You really have had 2.5 rookies start on Sunday. Troy Fautanu's first ever game. The second ever start for Spencer Anderson. Zach Frazier's second ever start. And then you're rotating your right tackle with another right tackle as a first-round pick. So a lot of those things, that's going to hold you back.
On the road, too.
On the road, where I thought in the first half they played a pretty good offensive game, and then in the second half, penalties did them in. I also thought that they really ratcheted back, knowing that Bo Nix wasn't going to beat them.
Right.
So upon further review, and after seeing Atlanta yesterday, and it making a lot of sense what Arthur Smith said last week about avoiding the middle of the field, I don't feel great about the offense. I'd be lying if I said I don't feel better than I did whenever I watched the game initially.
Well, that's the little things. It's like, oh, man, you have an offensive coordinator that's identifying things and not what to do and what to do whenever you can find success. Like, you ain't getting that last year.
No.
And that's if you really want to look deep enough, like, that's where I say that it is different.
Mm-hmm.
May not look different right now, but it is a different approach to everything.
I mean, they're throwing offense. Tight ends at you, yeah, with a purpose. Like, dude, Darnell Washington's taking on defensive ends.
Yep.
And, like, eating them for lunch.
Yep.
Like, they have a plan, and it's not going to be a finished product. For all those reasons that I laid out and that you've talked about, they're not going to look like a juggernaut. Now, I think the level of competition goes up this week. You're probably going to have to score 2 touchdowns, I would think. And then you're going to have to continue to build off of that. My big worry, my big concern is, if you told me, Arthur Smith said, we're going to get a lead against Denver, and we're going to sit on it, and that's our game plan, I'd say, okay. Against Atlanta, we're just not going to throw it over the middle of the field. We're going to run the ball. We're not going to turn over. Okay, I'm good with it. I'd like to see it evolve, because I still think it could be Tomlin saying we're going to have to win conservative. But if I remove Tomlin from it, and all I knew was that Arthur Smith is your guy calling the plays, these are 2 really good game plans, knowing your opponent and how to win those games.
2 really good game plans whenever you have your backup quarterback in.
And that too.
This is exactly how they're approaching it. You're the backup quarterback. I mean, think about it. Whenever you have a backup quarterback in, how do you play football? Don't lose us the game. Don't lose us the game. That's exactly how they approached the first 2 games.
And I think to that point, Russell Wilson, unless Justin Fields goes off this week, Russell Wilson's likely to be the starter week 4 against Indianapolis.
Yes.
I don't think with Russ, they're going to call it conservatively, because I think they know he's going to protect the ball regardless of how they call it.
Yes.
With Justin Fields, you have to pound it into his head.
Yeah, to protect him.
Protect from him from being him.
Yes.
With Russ, you can call a more aggressive offense knowing, oh, if it ain't there, he's going to check it down. Or he's going to throw it deep down the sideline, where worst case scenario is it winds up being like a punt. You can call a different game and expect similar ball protection results from Russell Wilson.
Yep.
And I do think that would aid the Steelers in their pursuit of greatness here, because I do think you can win this way. It just has to lead to like 22 points. If you get to that magic number, we talked about this leading up to the season. You get to that magic number like 22 points per game, you can be a threat, but you do got to get there. Oh, that's a great conversation.
Yep.
Start things off. 412-928-9370. I don't think a lot of people around here like Pro Football Focus. That's just a guess based on TJ Watt. Here's a stat when we come back that's going to make you say, okay, PFF just sucks. And then we got to have a discussion about the Steelers defense, because I don't think, and I'll blame myself for this, I don't think we got to them enough yesterday. for how good they've played through two games. Fan Morning Show is brought to you by Guardian Protection, your hometown home and business security company. If you'd like to chime in on our conversations today, you could tweet us. Brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. You can text us. Brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey.
Everyone back for the Steelers in their ultra prevent defense. Nicks over the middle and it's picked off. DeMonte Casey turns out the lights as the Steelers come to Denver and win it 13-6.
It was a win. And it was a win on the back of the defense for the second consecutive game. Steelers defense giving up 8 points a game, and we'll get into the defense in a second. But how about one particular player from the defense? This from Dale Lawley of Steelers.com. Dale's a good friend of mine. Dale really helped me make it in this business. Just being a friend.
Mm-hmm.
Kicking cancer's ass right now, by the way, Dale
good,
Lawley is.
Good
yeah.
For him.
My God. Anyhow, so Dale tweeted this out. Steelers cornerback Joey Porter has allowed 3 catches on 5 targets in 2 games while playing nearly every defensive snap. 1 catch went for 2 yards. Another went for 7. PFF has him graded 85th out of 98 NFL corners. And then he added, and people wonder why I don't consider their grades realistic. Dorn, at the end of the day, isn't production production?
Right. Right, even if it's not going your way and you're not having interceptions, I mean, that's Joey Porter's game since college. If you're not at the cornerback position, if you're not really heard of or seen or thought about or show up, you're probably doing your job. That makes sense.
Yes. You know, I don't know. I can't. I'm not going to pretend like I went back and watched every defensive snap. And if I did, like, I'm not John Madden. But Cortland Sutton's pretty good. He had 1 catch for 26 yards. Like
Drake London.
Drake London did nada bup kiss against the Steelers. I look at what Denver had receiving, and okay, Josh Reynolds 4 for 93. I'd have to look and see if any of that was done against Joey Porter Jr., but I don't think it was. I saw a little Jordan Humphrey at one point matched up on Beanie Bishop. You're probably not going to win that matchup because Beanie Bishop's like my size and little Jordan Humphrey is a big dude. But through 2 games, not only would I say that Joey Porter Jr. is not one of their problems. I would say Joey Porter Jr. is one of their success stories.
No doubt.
He's been really, really good. And it's why, now to fold it into the defense at large, Doran, injuries are going to play maybe the ultimate deciding factor here on whether or not this remains an elite defense. But there is no reason to believe that this defense isn't better than last year's that finished sixth in the league in points against. And there's no reason to believe why this defense can't be the best in the National Football League. I can't think of a position unit right now where I go, oh, God, what are they going to do? Like, okay, I'd like Cam Sutton to be the slot corner. Mm-hmm. I don't think Beanie Bishop's been great. Apart from that, where's the weakness? I'm not seeing one.
I don't see one either. I mean, I think Deshaun Elliott doesn't get enough credit either. I mean, that guy's pretty good at his position.
He came in, filled the hole. A third down and short?
Yep.
Blew that bleep up, man.
Yep, he's pretty good. They strike fear. Like, you like to game plan as an offense. You game plan for a defense and what the defense is going to do, right? They're a base defense. They're a 3-4. They're a 4-3 defense, and they like to blitz. They like to run zone dogs, all the minutia that goes into football whenever you're game planning on offense. And then you kind of leave it to there. And then there's players that you kind of know of tendencies and stuff. But you really have to game plan your offense around the Steelers' defense. It's almost like it was with Troy. Playing against that defense, the Dick LeBeau defense, was so much different than playing against any other defense in the NFL, because you never knew who was who, and there were so many things going on that confused you that you almost had to throw out your offense to really predicate to what they were going to do on defense so they didn't bite you. And that's how the Steelers defense is. And Kirk Cousins saw that firsthand in the first game, and it's hard to get a beat on what a defense is going to do in the first game of the year, because you just go based off of last year because there's no film. But if you're Bo Nix and you saw that film, like, you're just like, oh, man. And if you're Justin Herbert and you see this film, like, you're really going to have to – you're going to have to eliminate a weapon, because you're going to have to keep guys in the chip and do those things. So it is very, very – it's a tall task for offenses to really get after this defense. You know, the aggression – and we talked about last year, it's like, when are we going to see Matt Cannon, this offense, take the game to the defense, take the game over and, you know, be aggressive? When are you going to see that on offense? It's hard to do that. I don't care who you are in the NFL against a defense like this that can just pin their ears back and get after you in so many different ways.
Well, that's the other thing too, Doran. Pin your ears back. I'd love to see them get a lead again. I mean, this game actually felt kind of like 30-0 when it was 10-0. Like, Bo Nix, all right, good luck. But you'd love to see them get up 2 touchdowns and just see how T.J. Watt and Highsmith and Herbig eat when they really can just focus on pinning your ears back and getting a quarterback. And I'll tell you what, Alex Highsmith got held an awful lot in this game.
Yes, he did.
So I think the game plan moving forward, if you're going against the Steelers, is, like you said, double-team Watt, throw a tight end out there, chip him, have a running back in the backfield, and then just hold the living hell out of Alex Highsmith and dare them to call it. Mm-hmm. Just dare them to call it. So here's statistics. 2 games, small sample size, but I don't know, man. The eye test just... And they played at least one bad offense. I feel much better about their defensive performance against Atlanta after what Atlanta did last night.
Yeah.
But they played a terrible offense last week. First and third down conversions at 19%. Our friend DeFabo tweeted this out, so I didn't have to look it all up. First in opponent passer rating at 56.8. Second in points per game at 8. I think number one comes to town this week in the Chargers. So this one will finish 9-6. Second in turnovers created. Fourth in opponents rushing yards per game. Fifth in yards per game allowed. Seventh in rush yards per carry. I mean, this defense has been dominant in every single facet. And I realize that Denver racked up a few yards late in the game. When Sean Payton kicked the field goal to cut it to 1 score, I think they were content to play prevent, try to rush the passer, but just, okay, if you accumulate yard, there's not enough time for Bo Nix to score twice against us. So I think the numbers are actually a little bit worse than they would be if they played it straight up. All right, we got plenty of football stuff to get to, some Pitt stuff to get into, according to the AP poll. I mean, man, Pitt starting to get a little bit of love, coaches poll, so we'll get into that. But coming up next, we've been waiting so long for Sidney Crosby to get his deal. And I threw up a Twitter poll on this, Dorn, and I'm interested in where you come down on it. PJ Fitzpatrick Twitter poll, brought to you by PJ Fitzpatrick Home Improvement. TrustPJ.com. So we know Crosby will be here for the next 3 years. Should he want to be?
I'm really happy to know that I'll be here for a few more years. And my last contract, I don't think I thought about the possibility of still playing beyond that at the time. Really happy that that's worked out this way. You know, having the opportunity to play with Gino and Tanger this long, which is pretty rare. You know, being part of an organization like this for as long as I have has been really special. So still, you know, hunger from the organization and ownership to win and a commitment there. And I think that's something that, you know, I think for the time that I've been here, that's been the case, and that's been there, and I think that's really important, I feel like.
All right, so you got Roberto Clemente and Troy Polamalu. You've got Mario Lemieux. Sidney Crosby should be right there among the most popular athletes in the history of Pittsburgh, and I think he could make a case to be deserving of number one because he's two decades into his career, and they've had him at a discount the entire damn time.
Yeah.
And I got to say, if I were Sidney Crosby, Dorn, I would not want to be here anymore. They're not going to win a Stanley Cup. He's got 3 years. I think that was probably the hang-up, by the way, on the contract, just trying to figure out the years. He is such an honorable dude to take like $4 million less per year than he could, to also not go 4 or 5 years on this thing, knowing that after you're 35 in the NHL and you retire, that team can't get out from under that cap hit. They are screwed. So you kind of sign a shorter deal, not knowing 100%. He's won 3 championships. He's carried himself with class. He does charity work, doesn't want cameras around. He gave that quote-unquote press conference on the front stoop of some Penguins fans' house. Very rarely in sports do people live up to being a legitimate person that you can look up to. Not saying it doesn't happen. This is like the perfect guy. I wouldn't want to be here. They're not going to win. I think it's awesome that he's staying. And he should be, if he's not the most popular Pittsburgh athlete of all time, he should be right there in the conversation.
Well, I wanted to tweet a few things last night. I tweeted one thing, but another thing that I wanted to tweet was is if you have a young athlete, a young daughter or a young son right now, and a lot of people do this. They're like, you need to find a role model, an athlete that's a role model. And some athletes are tasked with that, and they don't want that task. A lot of athletes feel like you're their parent. You know, you should be the role model. But athletes throughout the time have been tasked of being a role model. There, if you want to show your kid of how to do it the right way, you start from 2005 when Sidney Crosby started till right now, and then obviously till the end of time whenever he does retire, of how to do things the right way. If you really want your kid to have a sports role model, it doesn't matter what sport it is. It could be football, basketball, baseball, doesn't hockey, it doesn't matter. But how to do it the right way, not on the ice, I'm talking about off, and every single thing that you do. He is the number one example. And literally in our time, I mean, I feel lucky to say this too, that there's two guys that are right around the same age as me who are arguably two of the best examples of how to be an athlete, Sidney Crosby and Steph Curry. Both guys, Sidney Crosby, a year older than me. Steph Curry is 15 days older than me. I also said last night, things I'll never take for granted. Being able to watch Mario Lemieux as a kid on a bi-nightly basis if I wanted to, and being able to watch Sidney Crosby as an adult on a bi-nightly basis if I wanted to. I said the people of Pittsburgh have been so fortunate, and we absolutely have. Should he want to be here? Does he want to be here? He obviously does want to be here. Should he want to be here? I think he told us in that interview. The second thing he said, you know what he said? He said, I've been basically, I'm paraphrasing, being blessed to be able to play with Tanger and Gino for so long. That's why he wants to be here. That's why I think I don't know if he should want to be here for that reason, but I understand why he wants to be here for that reason. I think if he finishes his career out with those two, I think that is his main motivation right now. Just by hearing that little blurb, hearing that little clip. It could be the cups. Obviously, he wants to win another cup, but I think that's secondary to playing with those two guys.
I agree with that. And I also think, unfounded or otherwise, he believes they can still win a championship.
Of course.
That's the way he's cut. I also think, and this is kind of out there, you have the Olympics coming up in a few years. I think that's huge. because it gives him something that realistically he can attain and win a championship and satiate that feeling. I think that's legit. I think they believe internally that they just fix the power play. They can be a playoff team this year, and then you throw everything out and you see where it goes. So I asked the question, should he want to do this? If he's hunting a cup, he should want to go elsewhere. But people value different things. He's won three championships. He's achieved everything. He's won more championships than Lemieux. Like, he's never going to be Lemieux because even though he's a top four, maybe top five player of all time, Crosby, some will make the argument that Lemieux was the best ever. Mm-hmm. If he didn't have the cancer, didn't have the back stuff, could have been the best ever. So from a talent standpoint, never going to live up to it. Three championships is more than Lemieux. So you don't really need anything more. Someone else text in, ever hear that money isn't everything? Why would he want to leave? Look, people value different things. It's a rare thing what he's done.
Yes.
He is the 42nd highest paid player in hockey. 42nd. He was 12th in scoring last year. When The Athletic does their polls, who's the best two-way player in hockey? Every year, it's 87. So in some people's minds, he's the best.
Yes.
And he's the 42nd highest paid player in hockey. Yeah, you text in, ever hear that money isn't everything? Sure. But I think you need to point out what he's done because most guys won't. And I don't fault anybody for trying to get the most money they can get.
Mm-hmm.
You only got one body. You only got one life. You're doing the thing you're best at.
But is he getting paid his worth?
He's not getting paid his worth. And it's very Brady-esque. Brady did that. Brady, the ultimate winner. In this generation, Sidney Crosby, bar none, not close, the ultimate winner. And, hey, look, I don't think they're going to win a championship. I don't know they're going to win a playoff series in these next 3 years. He gives them a better chance to do that by taking less than the highest paid player in hockey, which is $13.2 million. If he walked into Kyle Dubas' office and said, the final 3 years, I want $13.2 million a year, I think Kyle Dubas would have given it to him. He didn't do that.
No.
That's awesome, and he deserves for this to be pointed out.
He cares about the franchise and for the reasons why he should not want to be here. There's so many reasons why. One, it's, you know, maybe not probably going to win another cup here. There's so much different. I mean, he came in with Mario, lived with Mario. Mario was the owner. He's not the owner anymore. Different ownership, different management, different all everything. Those are reasons why I think that he should not want to be here. Just go somewhere where it's a new scenery and you do have an actual legitimate chance. But, you know, he's a guy that cares about this franchise. He cares about his teammates. He cares about playing with the guys that, you know, he did win cups with, that the guys that are left actually still playing hockey. And I really do believe that that is his main motivation.
Sure.
Right now is going out on the sword of, hey, 71 and 58.
He loves them.
Loves them.
Yep.
Yeah. And I get that. Like, I love that about, you know, because, hey, I already won cups. I won cups with these guys. Listen, we're 30, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40 years old. We're still playing in Pittsburgh. Let's just go out and you know, finish this thing up together.
Mm-hmm.
I totally understand where he's coming from in that aspect.
Yeah, and it's great for the fans. I mean, it just is. Like, hey.
Because he has to be realistic, too.
Right.
And he is. You know, I mean, it's not like he's going to, you know, fake himself out to think that, like, we have a legitimate chance to win another cup. Yeah, you want to tell yourself that because you're a competitor, but you also have to be realistic about the situation, too.
I think the goal is let's make the playoffs and then
then we'll see.
And then we'll see.
Yeah.
And then we'll see. And as far as Penguins fans are concerned, like, I think we all need to look at it realistically. Let's hope that they make the playoffs. Let's root for them to make the playoffs. But if you are a hockey fan in this town, you have at least three more years where hopefully he's going to play 82 games. Just soak them all in.
Yep.
Soak them all in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, life comes at you fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it. Ferris Bueller. Coming up next, people locally very excited about Pitt. But now it's seeping out nationally. Where? How? Who? We tell you. Doran, you're going to be happy to hear this. 50-minute mark on the Fan brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Route 19 in Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Jeff Hathorn going to join us at 7. Late addition to the lineup, Trey Essex, talking Broderick Jones and all of that coming up at 8 o'clock. Here's the thing you're going to like. Eli Holstein, ACC quarterback of the week. Shouldn't be shocking. ACC newcomer of the week. Shouldn't be shocking. I saw one of these college football accounts that has like 800,000 followers, had him 10th right now in the Heisman running. I saw Boomer, Sooner, whatever, They said he was the third best quarterback this week. Sorry, listen, given the stakes, Sooner account, whatever the hell you are, he had the best game in college football this week. So you have that, and then Pitt did get one vote in the AP, but they got 17 in the coaches poll, which AP is the one that gets used. Coaches poll is the one that I would care about more. Right. So with all that being said, Doran, there you go.
Well, I mean, yeah, they're getting their just due right now. And you know, you just, you don't pay attention to that if you're the team, obviously, but, they've been doing some good things. I mean, they put the country on notice. If you just look around and you just named a bunch of different outlets that have, you know, have talked about Pitt, like it is, people are aware now. I mean, I saw Kirk Herbstreit. I mean, he had Pitt the third best team this week. You know, people are aware and they understand the stakes too. I think they understand what Narduzzi, and they know Narduzzi and how he is, a lot of people around the country, and they know what he did in the offseason to revamp his team and know where Pitt was at last year. And it's right now, it's panning out. And Cade Bell is a big reason for that. You talk about teams like Pitt being in that area of the transfer portal where it's like, okay, like, you know, do I want to transfer to and take the most money in at Ohio State, or do I want to go to Pitt? If I go to Pitt for a year, then I'm going to go and I'm going to leave. Like, this is a good case of things working out for Pitt right now, and then you just reevaluate whenever the time comes to hold the guys here. So everything is working out for Pitt right now. Pitt just has to control their own destiny and control what they can need to control and not worry about anything else. But people are on notice. Like, this is a good football team. And I jokingly said that to you like last week. I was like, I think this is a really good football team. You're like, okay, we'll see, you know, this week. And I really do, like, all around, I think that they are actually a really good football team. I'm not trying to be biased right now.
I think it's impossible to come from behind down 21 points and then the following week come down from behind 10 points with 3:17 left and you not be a good football
team. It's not a fluke.
No. No. You'd like to play a full 60. But you know what? That's balls. And you need balls. And I can't say enough good things, much as it pains me to say, about what Narduzzi did, because a 3-9 season in the transfer portal era, that could be it, because everyone could leave. And then I think losing more now than ever begets losing, and winning, I think, begets winning. And he said, okay, we got to go make the splash. I got to go do something drastic.
Yes.
Because if I don't, this could be, seriously, this could be done.
Yes.
And he did go drastic. Mm-hmm. And they get Holstein and they get Cade Bell. It's a hell of a job by him.
It really is.
And we'll
really
see where it goes the rest of the way. But the win total of last year has been met already and shall be exceeded this weekend. And then you sit at the bye week and Cade Bell can sit there in the dirt and start drawing up new fun stuff.
Well, I mean, if I'm a player out there, and you know, even next year, like however this year ends, you know that it's a high powered offense. I don't think that that's going to go away. I think it's going to get better. If I'm an offensive player out there, why wouldn't I want to come here and play?
I agree, man. Like, they're so,
I mean, every receiver has pretty good numbers.
Yes,
every offensive player has pretty good numbers. All of them.
Yep, and they played bad offense the first half against Cincinnati. And for a while there in the second half, they played bad offense against West Virginia. They had three straight three and outs, and yet 28 points, 31 offensive points. I do agree. I think they're only scratching the surface on the full potential because they didn't put it together for a full game offensively. And when they do, hello. All right, your heart care matters. Trust the experts at UPMC. Get your heart screened by those experts there. Up next, Jeff Hathorn on a bunch of different topics, including Sidney Crosby and the Steelers. What's going on with Broderick Jones at right tackle? First, though, fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevrolet. 2024 Chevy Silverado, 1500, 1.9% financing up to 36 months with approved credit through GM Financial. Full term, sunchevy.com.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.